Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I'm still convinced that kittens have, like, alien DNA in them.
Mom, I don't care. I'll eat lunch later. Later.
What's it, come get me.
By the way, a cop...
Come get me. Hey, now.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm a professional blogger.
Come on, Kyle. Eat the sandwich. You're wasting away to nothing. Eat a piece of chicken, Kyle.
This is a sickness. This is an illness. I'm infected.
Hello, nurse.
Debate hockey.
What a cute little puppy. Oh, he's going to grow up to be a big, strong dog who challenges for the Stanley Cup.
How about, will you, like, give your head a shake? Look at the history of these two teams.
Give me a break. They had a 3-goal lead in Game 7.
You're a tough guy, I guess. That's it.
You're a tough guy.
Pop culture.
I'm down with OPP.
Did you ever find it weird that Fonz's office was a crapper?
I'm trying to find time to film myself eating a cupcake.
And more hockey.
Oh, you took a puck to the face and your teeth all melted. You got a concussion. Well, I died.
I'd agree with you if you were right.
F you.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show correctly. Rightly?
Start the show proper, shall we?
Hey, everybody, we're at the ACC. There's people yelling in the background.
That's people making onions for the hot dogs behind us right now. Those are people that are setting up and getting the popcorn ready and security, because right now it is drizzly in downtown Toronto outside the Air Canada Center. We're here right by our Facebook Live set, Greg Wyshynski.
Yes.
Also right by, right across from Real Sports.
Is this the statue? Are we looking at the backs of the Leafs? Bench of glory or whatever they call it.
Yes. Now, funny story. I think it was the first or second Sweden game. See number 10 there? That's George Armstrong.
Yeah. Who's this over here she's taking a picture with? There's a lady taking a picture with somebody.
I can't really see it. It's a little bit dark.
All right.
Hang on, but I want to tell you a story with George Armstrong.
Please.
Right beside Johnny Bauer. So, this 12:30, and this Swedish guy rolls by, okay? And he kneels right next to George Armstrong, and he kind of looks distraught. And he puts his head down, and we're like, me and Colby Armstrong, and we're like, wow, this guy looks like he's in bad shape. This doesn't look great.
Yeah.
And he puts his head down, and he's there for a while, then he looks up to the sky, and he puts his head down again. We're like, oh, man, did he just, like, get some bad news from Sweden back home, and he's stuck in Toronto, and what do I do, and this is awful. And then he stands up, and he goes, and he sits over this little stoop over to the side and lights up a cigarette. And so I'm like, hey, Colby, we should go talk to this guy. He looks like he's in a bad way, right? So we go over and talk to the guy. Put her hand on his shoulders. Hey, man, are you okay? Is everything all right? Oh, yeah, just hungover. Don't worry. It's just a little bit of puke. Puked on the skates of George Armstrong.
Wow.
And when a Henrik Lundqvist jersey, I should point out, 12:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, well, that's the one benefit of them scrapping this format and going back to the All Nations format is that we will get Latvians here.
That's what you need.
Yeah, we will get other fans here. And as we tape this podcast, we're a few hours away from Game 2 of the World Cup of Hockey Final, which by the time you listen to this, Canada probably will have won. But, you know, so the Canadian players talked about the atmosphere in Game 1 not being exactly all that festive. Part of that is the way that Team Europe plays, but part of that is the existence of Team Europe. And I thought that was a really salient point from Steven Stamkos in particular, who said you can get up for the U.S. because there's Americans in the building and they're cheering and they're chanting. You can get up for the Russians because there are Russian fans in the building, plus it's Russia.
Yeah.
You're playing a team that you have no history with, and they've got nobody rooting for them. Like, maybe Ralph Krueger.
To me, they're the winners because they're the one team in this tournament. Like, they'll probably get barbecued tonight, right? Probably by 7-1, and that's it, and Canada wins.
Assuming Canada doesn't play as poorly as they did in Game 1, yeah.
Canada played awful, and Europe played great, and still it was a 3-1 final.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're the one team that the NHL and Players Association, we talked about this last time, came up with so you wouldn't have Latvia in here going 0-3 and not scoring a goal.
Right.
Oh, wait, that was Finland. So this was that replacement, so we get all the stars under one tent.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, see, I love it because there's something very punk rock about this. We want you to be good. We just don't want you to be this good.
Right.
Like if you say to yourself, oh, this team, you know what? Europe's going to do really well.
Right.
And Europe's going to win a couple of games. I think the NHL and Players Association would say, that's great. That's just what we wanted. Isn't that fantastic?
Right.
Wow, what a success. Now, if you would have told the NHL and Players Association that not only would they win a pair of games, but they would be in the final against Canada, do you think that would be met with the same jubilation?
No.
At all.
No, it's like at a certain point, Mike Tyson stopped booking himself against real fighters and started fighting like Peter McNeely. Just started fighting straight out tomato cans because they didn't want to get challenged. You want it to look good?
That's the story of boxing in the last 30 years.
You want it to look good but not look that good. And yeah. I think that's the issue, is that the Europeans will look that good.
That's why I love this team, because there's something very punk rock about that.
Yeah.
Oh, you want it to just win a couple of games to be cute? No, we're going to the final. To me, this is already a win for Team Europe.
Well,
let's
talk about wins and legacy, because as people listen to this podcast, it'll probably be after tonight's game and the whole thing will be hopefully said and done, because I miss my dog. What's your takeaway from this, as far as it being a tournament, as far as it being resurrected? Do you ultimately feel it was a success? And if not, why wasn't it?
Ultimately, it depends on how you gauge success. Was it entertaining? At times, absolutely.
And at times, not.
And at times, not.
At times, it was very much a September exhibition tournament.
And at times, it reminded us why, as much as we fall over ourselves sometimes about European hockey players, the style of European play in Europe when brought over here is pretty dull.
Yeah.
It's pretty effective. The fans seem to love it and don't have a problem with it. And
right.
That's cool. European fans, but they have a closer affinity to soccer.
That's what I was going to say. It's always to me been a thing where they're much more patient and they're much more understanding of positional chess-like hockey, because they are used to...
That's their sport.
10 minutes of nothing
That's
and then a corner
sport.
Kick.
That's their sport. We hate that here in North America.
We do, especially in the United States.
It's funny, because I was watching the Sweden, one of the Sweden games in a section with a bunch of Swedes, and it was just that. It was kitty bar the door. It was ping pong hockey.
Yeah.
And I turned to the guy next to me, who was pretty well lit, and I'm like, are you enjoying this? He goes, this is the best. There was like two shots on net.
Right?
Yeah. It was a stretch of like 10 minutes. He goes, this is fantastic.
Yep.
And I said, what do you like about it? He goes, I just love hockey. Didn't care how it was played. And that seemed to be consensus amongst everyone.
Yeah.
That they don't really care if you're getting, excitement every single shift, and it's volume shooting and big checks and all that.
And meanwhile, in the U.S., we like American football, where there's a thing that happens every 35 seconds, and then it stops, and then there's another thing. And we like basketball, where
it's just
constant scoring.
Pause on the football example. Part of the beauty of it is, from a Western point of view, is you only have a certain amount of time to do something, and then if you don't, give it up, buddy.
Give it up, buddy.
Let the other guys do
but
it.
But on top of that, it's also a thing where... It's like a little mini show every 35 or 40 seconds. A thing happens, and then there's a slight break, and you get to hear about the thing that just happened, and then another thing happens, and then you get to hear about it again. Yeah. It's a really beautiful televised sport, but hockey, you don't get that. You get that occasionally when there's a break in the action, but in a game like Sweden, Finland, for example, like you're just kind of watching, and you're just kind of, the malaise is setting in.
You really there are times in the tournament where you really have to love hockey.
Yes.
Like, it challenges you to be a fan, right? It's like handicapping yourself on a date. It really does. Like, I'm not going to brush my teeth before the date. Like, it really challenges you to be a hockey fan. There's some moments where you really test how much you do love the sport. If you judge it financially, it's a success.
Gary and Daly both downplayed the financial impact in the sense that Gary told me that they made money, but you'd be surprised by how much they made, only because the costs to hold it were so high.
And was he in lockout talk mode?
No, he was very much in sort of just like honest assessment.
We have all these press releases about record growth, but just ignore those,
right?
Because we don't lock the players in.
But then Daly said something really interesting yesterday about the fact that this edition, this time doing it, was not one where the owners and the NHL went into it thinking we're going to make a windfall, and it makes sense because they had to have proof of concept. They literally had to turn, as we talked about on the show before, they had to turn to SAP, who they're already paying, to then give money back to them to have advertising on the jerseys. They couldn't get like Pepsi or somebody like that, and so I think it's one of the reasons why they sold a metric crap ton of merchandise, especially the Team North America stuff. But I think that's why they're going to go and change the format next time, is because for me, the big picture legacy of this tournament is that in Bettman's mouth, he said, it's the best hockey tournament you're ever going to see, because the two other teams that are filling in the blanks are filled with NHL players. And he's completely right.
Yep.
But going back to the other format affords you the chance to not just have a World Cup of Hockey, but have a World Cup of Hockey
qualifier.
And yeah, that's to me where the money is. When you extend this thing out and put games in Norway and put games in Latvia and put games all over the world with teams trying to get into the World Cup, well, now all of a sudden you turn to your friends at Adidas and say, listen, they've got jerseys, but they're old and ratty. They wore them in 2014 in Sochi. They're going to need new jerseys. So we're going to have to make new spiffy Adidas Norway jerseys that everybody in Norway is going to buy with Zuccarello's name on the back. Huh? There's a lot more money to be made by blowing this thing out into a full-fledged multi-year qualifying tournament than simply just a one-off in Toronto when everybody's at a Jays game and not here.
To me, the biggest problem is going to be location for it all.
Yeah, it's true.
That honestly, that is going to be... That's going to be, I think, one of the biggest challenges. We talked last time about New York, Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You could say Toronto, Montreal. I can dream in Technicolor about Winnipeg, Minnesota.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like
Los Angeles and Anaheim, the World Cup of Hockey.
Oh, jeez.
In early September.
I can't help but think, some of the background, Europe needs to be more significantly part of this geographically.
To make it more important.
Yeah. Like, is there, are there essentially two tournaments and you have to get out of your continent to then meet? Maybe that's a model you use?
Well, now...
Like, to make it a World Cup of
Hockey,
it can't just stay in Canada.
It can't just stay in Canada.
And the northeastern United States.
I agree with you, which is why I think that the other part of the legacy of this tournament is trying to figure out what the hell it is. Like... Is it a preseason NHL tournament where everybody's just kind of going through the motions and it's like a high school musical version of the Olympics? Or is it going to be trying to establish an actual World Cup of Hockey like you'd have in soccer? And I don't know the answer because honestly, I feel like Brent Burns was talking this morning about World Championships.
Yeah.
And the first time he ever won as a member of Team Canada was at Worlds. And he's like, he pauses for a second. And he says, you know, I never understood why World Championships wasn't a bigger deal. Because in every other sport, when you win Worlds, that means you're a world champion. In figure skating, if you go and win at the World Championships, you're a world champion. And he's like, and when he's talking about it,
but
I'm
hang
like,
on, he knows why.
No, he knows why.
Because European leagues conclude their seasons,
right?
So that the players are all free and clear to play in the World Championships. It's not the same.
But we don't.
In NHL.
Right. But I think what he's saying is that.
Why don't we put more there's of a so, bigger accent
there's so
on it?
I'm thinking when he's saying this, there's so much competition for what the pinnacle of the sport is insofar as international competition, as far as hockey.
Yeah.
The Olympics, World Championships, World Cup of Hockey. And I think that's the pecking order right now. And can you ever get this tournament to mean more than Worlds? It'll never mean as much as the Olympics. These guys have had a taste, and you can't go back.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
But is it ever going to mean more than Worlds, or does it even need to mean more than Worlds? Is it its own thing?
I tend to get nostalgic about it because I grew up thinking Canada Cup 76 was the best thing I ever saw until Canada Cup 87 rolled around.
That's right.
And then 96 was just the icing on the cake.
I know. I'm the same way. I'm
hockey
like,
was so fantastic.
I'm like, Star Wars is so great. Oh, my God. The Empire Strikes Back is so much better. Oh, now look. We got teddy bears.
So will it replace... I think it already probably has replaced the World Championships in North America.
Yeah.
Where there's not much of an appetite for it other than... I'm bored. It's the middle of the afternoon. This thing's in Moscow. I guess I'll watch it.
I want to see what my favorite Blue Jacket's up to.
Right? Hey, look, Ryan Ellis. Man, they should have beaten San Jose. But look, I get to watch him now.
Yeah, right.
Playing for the World Championships. So I think that's already there. In Europe, that's going to be a tough...
Yeah, it's going to... It's different
that's
for them.
That's a tough one because the entire hockey culture there is structured around... You stop, and then there's the world champion.
Right. Actually, I had an enlightening conversation.
So then, hang on. So
oh,
then maybe, then maybe the ultimate resting place for this tournament is not at the beginning of a season, but the end.
That's what somebody mentioned, is holding it in June. And it's an interesting thought. I just wonder if the PA would ever go for it.
There's no perfect time for it.
The NHL clearly likes it as sort of the lead-in kickoff to their season, too. But I was talking to a guy from Sweden. It's going to shock you. At a bar.
Hey.
And
what are you doing there?
I got lost. I was asking for directions to that glass of scotch I was drinking. I'm like, so what's the NHL to you? Like, what does it mean to you? Because I don't have a concept sometimes of what our league means to everybody else.
Yep.
My theory was always that it's like when an American watches Champions League or the Premiership, like... it's a thing that's on at a weird time. You make time to go watch it if you're a soccer fan.
Yeah.
And it means exponentially more to the people over there, and we're starting to get into it. And the Swedes and the Swedish guy's like, well, listen, like, we watch it when there's a reason to. And we kind of follow along what our players are doing there. But it doesn't come close to the popularity of the Swedish Hockey League for us.
Yeah.
And he said, so what's happening for us right now is that our best players come to the NHL. Our tier B players are now going to the KHL because they're paying more. And so what you have is the Swedish Hockey League, which, you know, is an institution and is culturally important.
Yep.
But the hockey's not going to be necessarily as good as it used to be because you do have these two leagues now preying on all the good players.
And that's why you now start to see, and you'll see it this year as well with Timothy Liljegren, who will probably go second overall, you start to see underage players playing in the top league more and more.
More and more, right, to give you something sexy to look at and also to fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the story, like, he's so good, he's playing in the top league. He's a 17-year-old. Right. Well, some of it's kind of out of necessity.
Right, like Hedman. Like that was Hedman's situation.
Yeah. Plenty of guys.
So
have done that. I always lose sight of it, obviously. I think a lot of us, to anyone listening to this podcast in Canada, the United States, loses sight of where the NHL is contextually internationally.
Yeah.
Because I am the wrong person to ask because I don't have a sense of
it. Yeah, and that's why I was curious.
I just think that everyone grows up thinking, oh, wow, one day I'm going to play in the NHL.
Right.
Is that true of the kids in Helsinki? Probably not.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think they do. But it comes back to that thing we've always talked about, which is what the Olympics are. And again, and Kuznetsov now joins the parade. He's like, I'm going to go too. Like, for the Russian kids, the Swedish kids.
Over to your Ted Leonsis.
The Finnish kids. They're all thinking more gold medal than Stanley Cup. And you know, to pause on that about the Capitals, like, the NHL totally punted on it. Like, Daly basically, you could tell Daly knows that if it becomes an issue, they're going to have to step in and say no if they don't go. Which I've heard, the 50-50 thing that Renee Fassel put out about the Olympics is actually...
I don't know that it's punting on it, because that really is a club decision.
You think so? Well, I mean...
How can the NHL force? I mean, it's... You're not going to play for the KHL, okay? So it's not like you're breaking a contract. Mm-hmm. Now, you are leaving and withholding services, but not to go to another league, so you can suspend them without pay.
Right.
That's up to the discretion of... That's up to the discretion of the individual club team.
I don't know that he's kicking
the can down the road.
Here's my only thing about that. NHL teams all the time rely on the NHL to be bad cop, right?
Oh, yes.
How much easier is it for Ted Leonsis to look Alex Ovechkin in the face and be like, I can't let you go because the NHL won't let me, versus I can't let you go because I need you here to help
us. Okay, then what happens when Alex says, I'm getting on that plane, Ted?
I don't know. That's the beauty of it, but I have a feeling like, you know, if it's gonna take a few guys to do it, but there's gonna be a trickle, and maybe not. I mean, maybe it's a situation where they.
Well, here's what I wonder too.
Yeah.
Is that going to become a negotiating point in the next round of CBA negotiations?
Allowing guys to go without repercussion.
Yeah.
Potentially. I mean, that's a real rosy, optimistic view that the NHLPA could ever get anything accomplished in labor negotiation.
Very good point. Excellent point.
Back to legacies of the World Cup. Here's my issue with the tournament, and what I think the thing that I've found lacking about it.
Okay.
It's less about winning a thing than it is about beating Canada. That's really what this tournament was about. It was never teams coming here and being like, because in the Olympics you can win gold, silver, or bronze. If you win bronze, you feel like you've accomplished something. If you win silver, it means you've been in the tournament final. Yeah. Here it's you're trying to win this big, goofy. Ashtray vase looking thing.
I thought they were going to go with a new one.
No, they're not. They're going to go with what looks like a mangled tank shell inside of acrylic. So the whole basis of the tournament, and part of this is obviously the American mindset coming into it, was beat Canada. Can you beat Canada? If they should have renamed it, you know, do you think you could beat Canada? ? Right?
The reality show.
That's pretty much what it is. So I think essentially that's my problem with it, is that at no point did
that's
I ever...
That's not the tournament's fault. That's just this very specific slice of hockey that we live in right now.
It could
that's
be.
That's not like
it could
by,
be.
By design of the World
it,
Cup.
It could
that's
be.
That's just this is where Canada is in its development cycle.
It could
and
be.
And right now, things are really good.
Yeah.
Some years ago, you want to go back to Torino... Things weren't great.
Yeah.
Things were
so you're saying that my problem with the tournament is that because it's here and because they're that good, we can't help but see it through the Canadian lens. Because that's my thing. Like, could U.S. beat Canada? Could Russia beat Canada? How excited are you to play Canada, Russia? You know, Canada, oh, is Sweden going to get a chance to play Canada? No,
but
they're not going to get a
chance. But let's not forget, too, like, for, you know, once, you know, Canadians pulled out of the World Championships and pulled out of the national team concept, I mean, it was all Soviet Union. And that, and even, you know, when...
They'd become the Soviets in that regard,
when Dynamo would come in, when the Red Army would come in to do their barnstorming tours, I mean, that was it. Beat the Russians. Right? Izvestia beat the Russians. Like, that was it. Like, that was, it was, and like the whole world against, it was club teams against them. It was Canada Cups against them. That was it. Like, there will be other teams.
Right.
Like, I still think that the U.S. has a dynasty waiting to happen.
Hopefully.
With all the kids that are there now. And what's the mantra going to be? Beat America. Well, how can we beat these guys?
I mean, you can't beat America. I mean, we're America, right? But like,
the election.
The cradle of democracy. You're right, but I think, I guess the thing I don't like about it, or the thing I found sort of tedious about this tournament, is that it's not simply just can you beat Canada, it's because they're so good, it's literally can you hang with Canada, and to that it
and
becomes,
don't forget, you're swimming in it right now,
right?
Like, this is a Palmolive commercial and you're so
yeah,
you're in Toronto.
I know
Team Canada, yeah. Air Canada, yeah. Center, yeah. And there's Sidney Crosby,
right?
You can't walk a block without someone tattooing that on a baseball bat and hitting you in the face with it.
Oh, no, you're right. You're almost right. I can't walk a block without seeing a baseball bat, because, honestly, that's all people care about right now.
It's
the Jays.
Oh, what a loss yesterday. Oh. I'm sorry, top of the ninth.
But, dude, like, pause on that for a second. Right. So they cancel the viewing party here for Game 2 at the ACC.
Inclement weather.
Because the air quotes I'm creating are like Mothra's wings. They're creating giant gusts of wind right now at Merrick.
Yeah.
So they cancel it for inclement weather. But what happened the other night for Game 1, it's like, it was a ghost town. There ain't nobody watching this stupid game on a big screen outside.
50,000 at Rogers Center.
But that's what happened, is that as soon as the Jays game let out, that people came here and started watching the game. Yeah. So I found that very interesting, and I'm surprised they didn't do it again just for that reason, is that, you know, although it would be paltry to start as soon as the Jays game lets out.
I'll tell you what, there was, and I talked to a couple security guards about this, there was a real, at the beginning of the week, there was a real, not fear, but there was some concern that tonight we could see the Jays clinch and Team Canada win the World Cup, and both the Rogers and the ACC, all the fans would exit at the same time.
Wow.
Right there onto Bremner. These are 8 o'clock starts here.
Yeah.
There was some concern that all of a sudden there's this massive humanity.
That'd be a hell of a thing.
Right at Maple Leaf Square.
That'd be a hell of a thing.
Right. I'd be staying inside. Right here where we are right
now. Yeah, wily veteran of the Vancouver riots that you are.
That's right. Have we seen any crystal meth fights, the likes of which I saw in Vancouver? Or I see what tear gas tasted like, but nonetheless.
So basically, just get back to my point, the tournament feels very much like the most tedious tournament in sports, which is the Olympic basketball tournament for men. Where it's basically just, can you play with the Americans?
But this year was interesting for that basketball team, because they won, but did they really look good in any of the games?
Well, no, and they didn't have the top talent, because, you know, Stephen Curry was afraid about getting Zika. So it's like there's a lot of that sort of thing going on too. But usually it's the way it works.
I was scared of getting Zika, and I was working a studio in Toronto. Yeah,
that's usually how it works. But and then as far as like other legacies go, I was thinking the other day about people who actually have benefited in a profile raising kind of way from this thing. I think Brad Marchand comes out of this thing looking even better than he did last year offensively.
You look at the guys that got contracts while the tournament was on.
Right.
Brad Marchand, after a couple of days of musing about playing with Sidney Crosby at the end of his contract, somehow signs a contract with the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
But I think the most immediate one is Dennis Seidenberg.
Seidenberg, absolutely.
Who signs with the Islanders.
Yeah, this was a weeks-long audition for him. He finds a home with the Islanders.
See, I was told, I think I mentioned this on the podcast, that four teams contacted him in the summer.
Oh, yeah?
So it wasn't as if all of a sudden, wow, we've rediscovered Dennis Seidenberg. Mm-hmm. There were, I mean, that's maybe how it'll be positioned. Like, oh, the launching pad that was the World Cup helped get Dennis Seidenberg a contract. Four teams, I'm told.
Yeah.
He was in talks with.
I think a rediscovering of both Yaroslav Halak and Sergei Bobrovsky's prowess when being depended upon to carry their teams. I think Tomáš Tatar comes out of this thing looking really good too. He's exhibited, and granted, it's in a skate tournament with not a lot of hitting, but he's exhibited some real impressive offensive skills, I think, this tournament.
Nathan MacKinnon.
Absolutely.
Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
Johnny Gaudreau, speaking of players without contract. I think those are two other ones you have to throw into that equation.
What do you? All right, let's talk about Gaudreau for a second, because I'm really starting to get a little worried.
$8 million.
I'm getting a little worried.
$9 million.
I know.
How much of this do you want?
He ain't gonna get $8 million. Okay. Well, I'm a little bit worried. I'm a little bit worried about how they're gonna get that done. How they're gonna get it done? Because he deserves more than Giordano. But I don't think they're gonna. I think that's the cap. I think that's the, no one's gonna make more than Giordano is what they're trying to tell us.
Does it feel like a short-term deal to you?
It's always felt like a short-term deal for me, because I think he's going to go play back close to New Jersey, either in Philadelphia or the Devils or whoever. I think he's coming back east.
Yeah.
But or going to Boston or whatever, you know? I think he's an East Coast boy.
Yeah.
But
Gaudreau comes out of this looking golden.
The tournament,
how
you mean?
Or the
contract?
The tournament. Yeah. He comes out of this with his stock.
Oh, super high.
How about Ristolainen skating with the Sabres without a contract?
That's pretty dumb. I understand you want to be a good company man and what have you, but like, what the hell are you thinking?
And then compare that to Kucherov, who's like, I ain't going to camp.
Or Tobias Reeder, yeah, who's basically not showing up and just go to the KHL. Like, yeah, I mean, that's just, it's nonsensical when players do that. I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
So Gaudreau will get his money, and they'll all get their money. I'm not too concerned about that. It's a fabulous thing, though. I feel like the World Cup kind of kicked all that a little bit down the road too. The negotiations, these guys signing, and I feel like we're deeper into RFA season than we usually are at this point.
I think at this point, it's what the World Cup has done is removed a lot of the negative headlines you sometimes get around training camp.
That's true.
Like there's and thankfully so, although there have been a couple of, you know, pretty bad ones. I think of Marian Gabrick, the most recent. You know, we're not talking a whole lot about injuries.
Yeah.
We're not talking a whole lot about contracts. Talking about hockey on the ice.
Is the body count from the World Cup of Hockey more or
lower
less
than I thought?
Much lower than
way
I thought too.
And I thought
we'd lose a goalie.
Yep.
Like, I mean, Freddie Anderson was technically in an Olympic qualifying tournament, but I thought we'd lose another goalie.
I thought we'd lose a goalie too. I thought the body count would be higher. And I think we saw this in the preliminaries too, when we saw Sweden and Finland, knowing how hard these guys were going to go right off the hop.
Yeah.
Players kind of ease them. I mean, unless you're a rookie and you just like put as much jam on the toast as possible.
Right.
Guys kind of ease into training camp.
Right.
As much as they work out hard and they come in, you know, in fantastic shape, it's tough to hit the ground running and be healthy.
Yeah.
So I thought that we have a more. I didn't know that guys would dive into the tournament like they did. I think guys would sort of were going to wade in the tournament. Maybe that's what Europe did.
Yeah.
They're going to wade in the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and that's.
They only, but that's. I mean, that's the only speed. The only speed they have is wade.
Except for Gabrick, and he's only got injured.
Right.
Quick one on the team.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it also helps that, you know, the most physical game that we had in the tournament was the first game of the exhibition schedule between the USA and Canada. No one even here. I mean, it's
in
a
Columbus. Hope we enjoyed it, Columbus.
It was very no-hit, no-grit kind of tournament. It's it's what it is. It's fine. It was fine.
That's your final stamp on it was fine.
You know, we do this before the final.
You would rather watch guys skating around on PTOs?
No. That's not the alternative. I guess maybe it is. No, I guess at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, we're talking about this. Maybe, but you know, we're assuming Canada closes out tonight. If they don't, there'll be a best on best game seven, if you will, and that'll be fun.
Yep.
But it's been fine. I still wonder why it hasn't caught on more. Both, I mean, back home it didn't catch on because the U.S. crapped the bed.
Yeah.
But I feel like here it's sort of like
a couple of things.
Not as big. As
a couple
it
of
be.
Things. Blue Jays, I think are a big one as far as sports fans' attention. Two, the one team that captured everyone's imagination didn't make it to the semifinal.
Didn't make it through. Yeah.
I think that's a big one. And three, I don't think you have. I mean, you have one identifiable team, but you don't have two. Like, how do you identify in a positive or negative way with Europe?
You don't.
That's it.
Yeah.
There needs to be.
They identify Chara because they boo him.
They do boo him,
which is hilarious.
Because back to the Boston series.
Because yeah, they boo Chara and they don't boo Price.
Or hey, can you want to let all these fans know here that both Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand were on that Boston team. somehow they're getting a free pass because they're wearing the red jersey. Hey guys, just a heads up.
Right, exactly.
I liked it, but I'm a sucker sometimes for international hockey. I think the one thing that you do have to ask yourself, if you're a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, baked-in-the-pie hockey fan, is there too much international hockey? I mean, you see it before the guys hit the NHL with the U-20 and 18 and Hlinka and U-7, go right down the list. You mentioned World Championships every year. You have the Olympics, which is still at the premium event. And now you have the World Cup. I think the NHL needs to figure out how much of an appetite do people have for international hockey.
That's a good point.
I don't think that it's been completely quenched yet.
Yeah.
Because there are still people that, and sizable, that are interested in this tournament. And if the United States had done better and, you know, been here tonight, you know, you would have seen a pretty high interest level. But I do think, and this is part of the portfolio for Bill Daly, I think you need to figure out how much is too much.
Yeah. How much is too much? And, you know,
I don't know the answer to it.
Does it essentially feed into the xenophobia that American fans have that prevents them from liking hockey? We like the NHL because it's a North American sport.
Yeah.
We don't like a lot of international stuff, less the Olympics. What do they have going on in back of you? What is that, a hovercraft?
It's a floor Zamboni. Check it out.
No, it is a floor Zamboni.
Yeah.
So before we get to, do we have any cues?
Oh, yeah,
we got tons. We'll get some cues in a second, but I wanted to get your take on NHL 100. The centennial celebration that's coming down the pike. First of all, great to see Wehner back in the fold.
Yeah. That was an interesting, just knowing the acrimony between the two, going back to the Coyote situation.
The Coyote situation, yeah.
Thematically would have been great if it was in year 99.
Well, I mean, technically, it's the 98th season of NHL
yes.
hockey.
correct, very nice.
Yeah.
I've always maintained that no matter what had to happen, and I know it had to transpire like that, that the NHL needed to make good with Wayne Gretzky.
They had to.
You can't have that person on the sidelines.
Yeah.
At all. You need that guy to be Wayne Gretzky.
Especially when you're going to do like the top 100 players of all time, and then you can't get Wayne Gretzky at your event.
The top 100 alphabetized players.
Oh, I know, right?
Of all, which is very Canadian. Let's not make anyone feel like they're.
But they're smart though. Like, although it does disappoint me that they're not going to put the hammer down and pick the top 100 and rank them.
Yeah.
Although there undoubtedly will be number 101 that we'll all say, "Why weren't you there?"
All you need to do, Steve, my idea for that one would have been that as part of the celebrations, you name a blue ribbon panel of 20 hockey people that are going to vote on the greatest players of all time. They are going to rank from 1 to 100.
Yeah, they still could do that, but if it's not
an
official NHL thing,
yeah, itself can wash their hands of it.
Yeah,
and say, hey, no, all we did was you know, here are these 20 guys and gals that are voting on it. This isn't ours. Our hands are clean.
Plausible deniability for Colin Campbell and John Delapina.
Got to make it public.
Right. But the thing about it is that they're smart because they're going to do the alphabetical list and then it's going to be on the media to rank them, which is what all we're going to be doing during All-Star Weekend when they finalize this list is ranking that list. It's going to be great. Yeah. The one intriguing thing I find about doing the top 100 players for the celebration later this year and into next year is how young do we go? Who from the post-lockout era will make the list?
Yeah.
Sid and Ovi and that's it? Will Patrick Kane make
Malkin.
It? Will Taves make it?
Yep. Oh, Taves will be there for sure. Going away.
How many modern players make that list? When you break it down, and remember, Jeffy, 100 players including goalies. So now you're talking 70,
but that, but
70 forwards and defensemen?
But that underscores any list. Funny, I was just reading one of...
We had to pause for a second because the Zamboni was coming through.
I'm about to tweet a picture of said Zamboni.
Top 100 players would be fun. I was saying that we were going to rank them. It's be ranked. And we were talking about how young they're going to go. And I am interested to see that. I mean, I think guys... Like would somebody who came into the league in 2013... 12, no, I guess it's right. I mean, I guess it'd be like Sid Obi, Taves, Kane...
Here's the thing, though, Greg.
Yeah.
These lists are always fluid. These lists are always changing. These lists are always... Oh, it looks bad out there. Hang on, I just noticed how it's... Oh, it's really getting windy out there.
Oh, okay. it's inclement weather. That's why they canceled the viewing party.
Oh, of course. Like, I just picked up, in preparation for the tournament, going through some old hockey books, international hockey books, and came across, you know, a top 100 book written by the Hockey News, Steve Dryden, who was with TSN. When he was with the Hockey News, put out a top 100. And then in your own brain, you start filling in, well, no, this guy can't be here anymore because now there's Nick Lidstrom.
Right.
This guy can't be here anymore because there's Jonathan Toews.
Right.
So there, it doesn't matter. Year to year, it always shifts, which is why, how to say it, these lists are bogus.
Oh, no, come on. It's
fun.
The 100 best players in NHL history.
They're fun, but it always, the minute it's published, it's not, doesn't make sense anymore. It's fun to discuss and debate and waste time, but
well,
you know me on this kind of stuff.
I had the best conversation I had about that list was a dude who asked me, why are they splitting up the list into two different eras? Like, why are they doing, like, up until 67 and then doing it after it, and like two different releases of names? I'm like, well, because they want to do a celebration in Los Angeles for the second part of that list, and everyone else on the list would be dead. So, like, why would you waste time? All right, what are the people asking us today, Jeffy?
All right, let's get to some.
Again, that noise you hear, by the way, is the floor Zamboni here.
Okay, from Ryan Andrews. What has happened in the preseason thus far that could shake the notions that preseason hockey doesn't matter?
Well, two things, obviously. The first is the, and I saw the Globe and Mail did a 30-page pullout on it, Austin Matthews breaking a pane of glass at practice.
Yep.
Huge news. And then I was watching Oilers highlights last night with McDavid and Lucic playing on the same line. And I will say this, I will be super impressed if Connor McDavid breaks 100 points because I'm not sure there's anybody that can play with Connor McDavid.
Okay. Did I not say this going back to when
you
they signed Lucic?
You did.
Like, find me... Now, mind you, when he played with the Erie Otters, I mean, Alex DeBrinket was a mainstay, Chicago draft pick.
He's so fast, and he's got that Gretzky-Crosby computer in his head that allows him to think 17 plays ahead. And you saw him make passes that were, like, ungodly in this game last night. And you're like, who's going to receive him?
Which is why... he is going to break a record. And you know what that is? And I don't know the number. Maybe our crack research staff, as I look around the room. Oh, yeah, our crack research staff, which is Google.
Yeah.
He'll probably break Mario Lemieux's record for shorthanded goals. He's a great penalty killer.
Yeah.
Like, when you can think like that, last year towards the end of the season in Edmonton, Todd McLellan would always use Lori Korpikoski and Matt Hendricks as the penalty killers. And they get hemmed in and run around. And then towards the end, he would put Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Connor McDavid together.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I'm sure.
It was great. Like, when you can think with that speed.
Yeah.
So if McDavid
and
can pick
finish,
off a
too.
Pass
yeah.
shorthanded. Now, he does need another breakaway move. Everyone knows it's a million deeks and he's going forehead and trying to stuff it in by the right post.
He's young.
That's okay. Listen, he knows this, right? Yeah. Like, and he will. And he's like uber talented and he's going to do that. But, you know, I see him as being, you know, 100 is ambitious this year, certainly. He's going to have a hard time finding guys that can keep up with him.
Yeah.
I think that when Jesse Puljujärvi fell in Edmonton's lap at the draft, all they saw was visions of a Finn and a Canadian skating together, Alec Gretzky-Curry, all over again.
Yeah.
So maybe he's the guy. But I'm curious to see more Connor McDavid shorthanded.
Yeah.
Because that separation speed, that breakaway speed, like when he picks off a pass up high and he goes...
Yeah.
Shorthanded goals is going to be fun in the new Rogers ring.
What are we? Two more questions. All right, here.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
we
yeah.
got?
Let me find some good. Filibuster here while we find.
They're doing a performance of O Canada on the ice tonight.
At gray is the color. Is that a cardigan wish or a pullover?
This is a. I mean, what would you call it? It's like a sweater.
Sweater. V-neck.
But it's like a V-neck.
It's a V-neck sweater.
It's a V-neck sweater.
Yeah,
so
button down Republican shirt underneath with a tie.
I bought two sweaters for the. I had a suit, but I left the suit home after Leahy's wedding. So yeah. I've had the same two sweaters I've been wearing over and over again with the same shirts wearing over and over again. I'm officially out of underwear.
Do the old college trick. It's turned it inside out.
Well, that's a good trick. I'm on two-a-days now. So,
workouts? No, underwear. We'll be right back.
So hopefully this thing ends tonight.
All right, further on that then. Cooper's dad submits, does Wish own an iron? # bad caller.
Oh, you know, I thought I got the collar right, but I maybe didn't.
It's
I think
wrinkled, bud.
Part of the problem is that it's sort of it's a collar that sort of isn't, like, it's a cheap shirt, so it's sort of, it makes everything look off-center.
Good worker doesn't blame his tools, Wish.
Yeah, I have an iron. We're staying at the Harbor Castle, so I had an iron, but I'm not quite sure how to work it.
Okay, this is it. Michael Perino, how long can Shovel Day Off play Iserman and not trade Truba before it becomes a problem?
As long as he needs to.
I don't know that he gets dealt. I don't think that he does.
I think it's such an asset, and he's completely right. Like, send me a commiserate player, because the guy that I have right now is a top four defenseman, and he's got at least 4 years left before unrestricted free agency. So good luck matching that asset. I don't think he can.
The one team that I keep coming back to is Boston.
Yeah.
And the one guy I keep coming back to as well on that team is Charlie McAvoy. And I know the org group guys hate it when I say that, but if you're going to make that trade, if I'm talking to Boston,
yeah,
that's the first thing out of my mouth.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
McAvoy's outstanding.
Yeah.
That would be, but that's honestly, the story of Kevin Shovel Day Off has been patience, hasn't it? Why do we think all of a sudden he's going to be forced into hitting fast forward on a tape deck?
We're like, what, just over a year removed from celebrating the fact he actually made
a trade.
Yeah, like inertia is the name of the game for this guy.
Right? Evander Kane, finally, what?
Yeah, right.
He made a trade,
right.
So yeah, I don't think. Okay, let's see.
All right.
Best vegan stadium food.
Oh, that's easy.
What is it?
Wait, is sushi vegan?
Well, the veggie stuff is.
Certainly. Yeah, so a veggie sushi would be it. I've had, of the ACC cuisine I've tasted, I enjoyed my taco salad the other night. I enjoyed the sushi burritos.
Did you get the big fat, like, $18 sushi burrito?
Uh-huh.
The per diem buster,
has
it like
per diem buster was amazing. And then tonight I think I'm going to finish off a little bit dangerous with a little Italian sausage from the shop formerly known as Berkey's Dogs.
Man, this is an interesting. Oh, are you gonna finish up with the Berkey Dog here?
The Berkey Dog, yeah.
You're gonna do it, eh?
Sausage.
Have you had one yet?
No. But you keep on saying it like
it's not the same.
What's not the same?
It's not Berkey.
Because it's not a Berkey Dog. So the Nathan's, but they were probably Nathan's dogs. They just had Brian Burke's picture on the front of them. Okay.
I mean, there was something hamburgers before they decided to call it the Bob Nicholson Hamburger in Edmonton. It's not the same. Aaron Bensing, lighthearted question.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
Jesus.
With Waugh being gone in Colorado, will CBJ be the new punching bag on the podcast with Torts as head coach?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Yeah.
Man, did we ever warm to Colorado fast?
But at the same time,
I think that's natural.
I mean, when you say new punching bag, that would indicate that it wasn't already a punching bag. When he was hired, we both thought it was a nonsensical move because of where the franchise was.
Yeah.
And I mean, and he was hired. Remember, he was hired at a time when they were completely out of the playoff hunt. And then they hire him for what was essentially a rebuild, and it was just a dumb move. So, like, yeah, I mean, it'll be a punching bag, but it's been well-established. It predates his Olympic performance, for sure.
I just want to see Zach Werenski.
I just want to see... I want to wish them well, because they do have a lot of players that I like, and I love Yarmo, and I love John Davidson, but, man, that was a dumb idea. So, no, the new punching bag's obviously going to be Anaheim. We all know that, right?
Like, oh, it's already started. After Randy Carlyle's comments last night about playing with enough grit. Oh,
uh-huh. No, they're the new punching bag. Absolutely.
They could be poised for a spectacular fall.
They could. Well, yeah, people forget that, like, say what you will about the man's inability to win a Game 7. Bruce Boudreau sprinkles regular season pixie dust on every team that he's with. And all they do is win, no matter what. And they're going to... And you take that away and all
this
of a sudden...
This is a challenge, bud.
What?
This Minnesota?
This
Minnesota team.
You'll get in the playoffs. I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced that man can't miss the playoffs. Can't win the playoffs, but can't miss the playoffs. He's missed the playoffs once.
Eric Staal. Mikko
Koivu. Gorgeous man.
You see Zach Parise in the tournament.
Yeah, no. No, I know what you're saying.
Like,
I agree.
this is a tough one. Trust me. I love Minnesota, but this... Okay.
Here we go.
Brian Sylvester, could we see McDavid pull a Truba at the end of his entry-level contract in Edmonton if the Oilers continue to miss the playoffs?
Well, yeah. I mean,
I don't think he makes it to the end of the contract. I think he's re-upped.
Yeah, he'll be re-upped, lickety-split. But the caveat at the end is an interesting one where, listen, we all know that Connor wasn't thrilled with going to Edmonton. He wore it on his face. That was pretty obvious. But I think he's someone that would easily love being an Oiler if the team's successful. But that caveat at the end is the interesting one. Like, what if the... I mean, I can't imagine the ineptitude is going to continue because of Connor and his existence,
yeah,
and his ability to be the next guy who wills his team in the playoffs based on his own performance. But what if they
are they a playoff team this year?
What if they suck? Well, but that's a function of playing the West.
That's part sure understandable, but
they'll get close. You have more confidence in Edmonton being close or Calgary being close?
Calgary.
Okay, you have more confidence in Edmonton being close or Winnipeg being close? Do you think Calgary's a playoff team?
I go back and forth on Calgary. I don't go back and forth with Winnipeg. They're not, and I don't go back and forth with Edmonton.
I go back and forth on Edmonton, but that's only because, again, like I hate looking at a pile of great ingredients and saying why hasn't anybody cooked it yet? Yeah. You know, like I want to see those kids in the playoffs.
Scott T, what are your thoughts on Austin Matthews breaking the glass in his first Leafs
Jesus. Oh, I gotta tell you, man. Like,
okay,
hang on.
For everyone says that the media does too much with this, A, you're right.
Yeah.
But B, you forget this is what the marketplace wants.
I think Drager said that the post on TSN with video of the glass breaking got like 50,000 hits in like 3 hours.
Same as us.
Yeah. So
everywhere.
I know. No, I think, listen, I was on the fence on whether or not he was going to go to the Hall of Fame, but now I think it's
first pretty, class
it's
break.
First class, yeah.
Most famous.
But my favorite thing about the Leafs coverage yesterday from the MasterCard Center for Hockey Excellence was seeing Morgan Riley and just seeing, it was like seeing somebody walk out of a penitentiary. It was just like this kid who's all of a sudden got this guy here, and now he can actually see the sun peeking over the mountains. Like the dawn is near for this poor bastard who's been on this Leafs team.
And there's Mitch Marner.
Yeah, oh God, and Riley's been there for all his nonsense and all this rebuilding and all these disasters and people throwing jerseys on the stands and hitting him in the face. It's like now he's finally got someone to show that there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's a beautiful thing. I felt so good for him.
Oh, here's one for you. What happens with Kucherov?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really tough one because they have a certain amount of money they can offer him, and he clearly deserves more than that. And I don't know what the end game there is. I mean, again, you come back to the idea of it being a smaller contract. I mean, they got to sign him, but
it's going to cost him a player.
It might cost him a player. And is that player going to be Bishop? Because they obviously don't want to give him up right now. They want to hold on to him. But yeah, that's a tough nut to crack. All right, listen, we've answered a lot of questions. We've helped out a lot of people with all their queries. I think it's time that we say goodbye. You have some Facebook Live things to prepare for.
I got some Twitter stuff. I got some Facebook Live.
I got
some Jumbotron action. What do you got going on?
I got to write a Devils preview.
Oh, well, this will certainly be right down the middle, Bill Alfonso.
It's actually going to just be a pencil sketch on a cocktail napkin of me nestling my head in Taylor Hall's lap.
Oh, you dream about Pavel Zacha.
Right, exactly.
35.
And then the big game tonight. The big one. The one we've all been waiting for. Tonight we may see.
Yeah.
I've heard the World Cup will be in the... Well, it was in the building.
It was in the building with the Mounties.
Yeah, with the Mounties.
What do you make of the Mounties?
You know, someone...
How do you look at them from a minute? Because I've just grown up with them. It's just the Mounties, right?
Somebody's like, why do Americans find the Mounties so amusing? And there's two answers for me there. One is Dudley Do-Right. And the other is Jacques Rougeau. Or used to,
the Mountie.
He was the Mountie, and he used to attack people with a cattle prod. But essentially, like someone pointed out, they're like they tweeted a picture of New Jersey State Troopers and Mounties to me, and they're like it's the same outfit.
Yeah.
And honestly, it looks the same, but the New Jersey State Troopers have a bit more of a sort of a 1930s German look to them, to be honest with you.
A little more badass.
Yeah, and the Mounties traditionally seemed like they were somewhere between a state trooper and a forest ranger to me.
They'll ask you to stop doing something first.
Right. Thank you.
Excuse me, can you stop doing that?
But they always seemed a lot, I don't want to say cuddlier, but maybe more personable than state troopers. Yeah. Anyways, Merrick, you're a beautiful human. It was great to do this face-to-face.
Love you, Greg Wyszynski. God bless you,
Thanks,
sir.
Everybody, for listening to the podcast. We'll be back next week, post-World Cup, and start getting knee-deep into the National Hockey League in all of its glory. Thanks to producer Sam for having put this podcast together that we're doing on my iPhone.
So is he waiting at the fan right now? For
oh, I have no idea when this is actually getting up.
Oh. Okay.
So I don't think we ever really communicated with that to him.
Stop.
He's going to get an email while he's like pre-gaming for the Jays game, and it's going to be really stunning. All right, dude. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye. Thank you.